I am the best wrestler in the world. I've been the best ever since day one when I walked into this company, and I've been vilified and hated since that day because Paul Heyman saw something in me that nobody else wanted to admit. I've grabbed so many of Vincent K. McMahon's imaginary brass rings that it's finally dawned on me that they're just that. They're completely imaginary. The only thing that's real is me, and the fact that day in and day out, for almost 6 years, I have proved to everybody in the world that I am the best on this microphone, in that ring, even in commentary. Nobody can touch me.
CM Jew, back with another pipe bomb on wrestling's past. I am, of course, CM Jew, and I welcome you to another fantastic episode. On this episode, I'm going solo as I take the Wayback Machine, which I borrowed from Mr. Peabody, to go all the way back to 1983. Now, why am I going back to 1983? Well, you may already know if you know your wrestling history, but allow me to explain. You know, upcoming is the show of shows, the show of the immortals, WrestleMania. But WrestleMania wasn't the first big extravaganza pay-per-view of its kind when WrestleMania 1 happened in 1985. That distinction would go to Starrcade of NWA at the time, which would later on become WCW. But Starrcade in November 1st, I think it was. Let me just double check that. November 24th, excuse me. 1983, with the title Flair for the Gold, as it featured a main event steel cage match for the NWA World Heavyweight Championship between Harley Race, the champion, and Ric Flair. And of course, that title, Flair for the Gold, does nothing to tell you exactly who will win that match. It was held at the Greensboro Coliseum in Greensboro, North Carolina, Ric Flair's home. So again, nothing tells you exactly who the hell is going to win. Your commentators would be Bob Caldwell and Gordon Sully, the legendary Gordon Sully, with interviewers Barbara Claire and a very young Tony Schiavone. God, I feel old now. Your referees for your matches were Sonny Fargo, Stu Swartz, Tommy Young, and then two special guest referees for two of the matches, the Angelo Mosquez, who was a wrestler for the Steamboat Youngblood Briscoe's Tag Team Championship match, and Gene Kaninsky for the Flair Race match, with ring announcer Tom Miller. So yeah, 1983 Starrcade, I thought it'd be interesting, since we're talking about WrestleMania, to go back to understand what was the first pay-per-view or big sort of pay-per-view thing that happened before WrestleMania that was like WrestleMania. As I'll be quite honest, the next two reviews I'm going to be doing are going to be WrestleMania 1 is going to be the next review. I'm going to have my good friend B-Hyphen on. We're recording it actually tomorrow as I speak, do this review. And then I plan on going back and looking at WrestleMania 14, the so-called start of the Austin era, which I think a lot of people have considered Tencent both those to be two significant WrestleManias. And mind you, I haven't seen WrestleMania 1 in a long time, in its entirety. I've seen the main event match, and I think I've seen the Big John Studd, Andre the Giant match. But that's it. And I don't think I've seen anything outside of the Austin Shawn Michaels match. So it's going to be interesting to go back and see that. Well, actually, I stand corrected. I've seen the Austin Shawn Michaels, I've seen the Undertaker Kane match, and I've seen the, I believe, the street fight. Between, you know, the Nation of Domination, Legion, versus the Legion of Doom, and, oh god, why am I blanking on his name? But you know who I'm talking about. Anyways, why don't we get right into it? Shall we, and review Starrcade 1983, A Flare for the Gold. Welcome back, and let's get right into it. Let's start off with our first match of the evening, featuring a tag team match between the Assassins, number one and number two, versus the team of Rufus R. Jones, the Mid-Atlantic champion, and Bugsy McGraw. This was a very simple to start off match. Ends with a blind tag and a roll-up pin. As McGraw slams number two, doesn't see the tag, number one rolls up McGraw. It's a very, very, like, 70s / early 80s match in that way. Very simple, headbutts, and, simple. Again, if there's somebody who's only been watching wrestling since 2000, I mean, these matches, I think, will just come to a shock. I mean, I think a lot, especially our younger fans these days, are so used to, you know, the luchadors and the high flying and the super moves, the famousers, the brawling and all of that. And it's just, I think a lot of these early matches are just how simple they are. I mean, these type of matches are like the starter matches now, but they're filled with so many basics. And for the most part, it was a good starter match. They get the crowd sort of started. I mean, like I said, it was simple. Simple roll-up. I mean, it's funny to look at, like, the blind tag and the roll-up. Like, yeah, that's not something that's been good. That's been going on forever. I'd say there's a reason that's a classic finish to a match. The blind tag and roll-up. With no tights being held, mind you. Just straight up roll-up and pin. Our second match of the evening featured Johnny Weaver and Scott McGee. Again, it's another tag team match versus the man who would later become the Taskmaster, Kevin Sullivan, and Mark Lewin, accompanied by Gary Hart. No recollection. I'll click the link here to see if he is, but I do not believe Gary Hart has any connection to the Hart Family Foundation. Nope, I don't see any association with Gary Hart. Nope. That's it. It's hard, because anytime you see Hart, you immediately think of the Hart family. And so no association with the Hart family, I have to say. You know, it was a good match. You know, Weaver's Bulldog and Sullivan was a good spot, I thought. You know, interesting. Interesting spot for the finisher, the knee drop from the top turnbuckle. It was on Weaver. Interesting spot, though, because it's to the arm. It's one of those 80 type of finishes, I think. And then, of course, you had the beatdown after the match, which leads to Angelo Mosquez coming out to try to help McGee, also getting attacked. Them lacerating McGee and Mosquez with a foreign object that looked like a pick. It's a foreign object. I'm like, it's a pick. What are you talking about? It's a pick. But yeah, it's an okay match. Again, if you're not used to watching stuff from the 80s and you don't have the nostalgic, I mean, I'll be quite honest. I mean, I'm probably from the mid 80s up, and I do appreciate these matches for what they are, but again, early 80s, not my cup of tea. In particular, NWA. Again, I'm a WWE, or should I say at the time, WWF boy all the way. And I guess there are people that are always going to be like, there are always going to be people that are sort of more NWA, more independent, and then there's going to be like the big promotion people like me. And no, I fully accept that I'm a big promotion guy. I love watching the indies, and I do love watching sort of the wrestling like that, but at the same point in time, I do love the storylines and love everything that comes from that. And you'll find out listening to this podcast. But, okay, match. Like the ending spot, but kind of weird, just being basically an arm breaker. But again, it's one of those things that did work as a finisher in those days. You know, interesting after-match brawl, obviously leading to a feud down the line. The third match, you know, it's kind of funny that we're doing this considering who got inducted into the Hall of Fame last week, features future WWE Hall of Famer Carlos Colon versus Abdullah the Butcher. I have to say, honestly, I mean, Carlos Colon is a great wrestler, but at the same point in time, I kind of felt underwhelmed and kind of felt disappointed in this match. And the reason is, I've seen some Abdullah the Butcher matches. So the ones with Mick Foley, the ones where, again, if you pick up the WWE Greatest Rivalries, they have one where Abdullah the Butcher, let me try to see if they have it. I'm trying to find who he had his big Bruiser Brody. They had this rivalry that was just epic, and it was just like these just brutal masses down in Texas. So I've seen those. That being said, this was a very much more subdued match where Carlos Colon pretty much dominates. I mean, Abdullah starts dominating, but then Colon basically dominates him. I'm trying to look. It's the match is only 4 minutes and 30 seconds long. I guess my issue is that it feels like they just keep hitting yourself with weapons, and it felt weak. I mean, the finish was Carlos Colon applying the figure four leg lock on Abdullah, and then Hugo Savanovich, yes, he wasn't just an announcer for the Spanish announce table, entering the ring and hitting Colon with a foreign object that looked like a towel. I don't understand what it was, but then Abdullah rolls over and pins Colon. Just a weird match, and it just didn't feel up to, you know, what I was expecting from an Abdullah the Butcher match. The fourth match was a tag team match between Chief Wahoo McDaniels and Mark Youngblood. His brother Jay would be in a later match. Versus the team of Dick Slater and Bob Orton Jr. Sans cast, a.k.a., by the way, the team that had captured the... in the storyline going into this... Because they kept... By the way, they kept going through the pay-per-view to, like, sideline reporters. By the way, if you want to know, you're in the South. They're, the first interview that... oh, God, let me look at her name. Barbara Clare. Clary, excuse me. Does with this from family from South Carolina? Like, yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. We think they're gonna win, ma'am. But like, oh, we in the South. And don't get it wrong, and don't get it twisted. I'm formerly from the South. I know how they think. There's a reason I'm glad to be in New Jersey, to an extent. But it's like, oh, it's so South. By the way, I didn't get the whole point. Oh, I got the whole point later on, but it's like, why are we going to the crowd? This is something I've never gotten pay-per-views. I recently watched, I think it was the 97 Rumble. They did this as well. I'm like, why are you cutting from the match to go to an interview with a fan in a crowd? I mean, it's one thing to do it in between the matches. It's another thing to do it in the match. Go to hell. Yeah, but on to the match to talk about. You know what? It was a decent match. You know, this was my third favorite match of the night. It was a good match. A lot of good spots. A lot of back and forth. And I really loved the finishing spot here, which was Orton performing a superplex and floating over. Like, wow, that was a damn good finishing spot for the match. With, of course, McDaniels not being able to get back in time. You know, all in all, it's just a great tag team match. You know, it's funny, there's one, two, three, four tag team matches, and one, two, three, there's eight matches on the card, and it's like split evenly between tag team matches. Yes, there was a time where tag team matches were a big thing. Somewhere TWK is going. Unless he's still angry about last review and is still cursing me for making him watch WCW Road Wild 1999. But he's not petty. I'm sure he's over it by now. But no, I thought this was a really good match. I love the back and forth. All four wrestlers did a great job in the match. And like I said, the superplex from the top rope was a great finishing spot. And mind you, I do like how they've kind of set this up. For the most part, for the first four matches, you have, you know, it's interesting. First four matches, all the bad guys win. And I'm kind of spoiling it now, if you've not watched it. By the way, spoiler alerts, if you've not watched this, you can go watch it on the WWE Network. Probably should have said that ahead of time. But I thought that was assumed. By the way, Darth Vader is Luke's dad. Because that joke isn't tired. Our fifth match of the evening features a title versus mask match. For the first 15 minutes. Basically, in the first 15 minutes, if the match is between Charlie Brown from Out of Town versus the champion, the NWA television champion, the Great Kabuki, accompanied by Gary Hart. Again, now affiliated with the Hart family. And the stipulation is that these stipulations happen in the first 15 minutes. So if a decision is done in the first 15 minutes, depending on who wins, if Charlie Brown wins in the first 15 minutes, he gets the title. If Kabuki wins in the first 15 minutes, he gets Charlie Brown hat must unmask. I would give this probably the fourth best match of the night. I found it to be an interesting match. I love that, you know, you had Brown, a lot of submission attempts here. It just ended oddly, I should say. I'm trying to be nice and gentle to the 1980s, early 1980s, but it's hard. Just, you know, simple miss kick and drop kick, and when it's very early wrestling ending. But what it was, it was a good match. And again, your new NWA Television Champion is Charlie Brown from out of town. Hey, Charlie Brown, come over here. What do you want to say about your win? Well, thank you, Charlie Brown from out of town. I'm sure you will cherish this NWA Television Championship for a long time to come, and I'm sure this will lead to many big things for you. Now that that impromptu interview is over, I'm an asshole. I wonder if CM Punk is proud. That being said, our next match is a match which I consider to be the match of the evening. The sixth match was a dog collar match between Roddy Piper and the NWA United States Champion, Greg Valentine. Or says Greg the Hammer Valentine, excuse me. I love this match. This was just a brutal... It was supposed to be a brutal match. It was a brutal match. I remember matches like the... they later became matches like the... bull rope match where they're tied to the wrist. But I remember dog collar matches. I've seen a couple of them. Oh my god. These are brutal matches, and it was great to go back and see one again. This, like I said, match of the evening, just a brutal match. Piper at his best. Valentine, just again. And I love the sort of ring psychology. They talk about, you know, well, Piper had this concussion and had, you know, he had injured his left ear and it left him distorted and, like, with balance issues. And there was a great story behind that of Valentine trying to attack his left ear. And I love the finish. I love that Valentine goes up to do this turnbuckle move, but Piper pulls him down and then mounts him, punches him with a chain, and pins Valentine with the chain wrapped around his legs. And mind you, of course, there's after-match fighting as well. But you know what? It was just a great match. It was a brutal match. Tons of blood. It's like, God, I love this match. And it was just, I love the psychology in it. I love the storytelling from Valentine and Piper. Just plain and simple, a great match all around. With that, let's move to our seventh match of the evening. A match between the tag team match for the NWA World Tag Team Championship, with Angelo Mosca as the special guest referee. The match features the challengers of Jay Youngblood and Ricky Steamboat, sans Dragon, I guess, at this point, versus the team of Jack and Jerry Briscoe. This was my second favorite match of the night. I really, really love this match. By me saying that, you pretty much said I don't think highly of the main event, and I'll explain why. But this was just a great match, great tag team match, great back and forth between the Briscoes and Youngblood and Steamboat. Some great double team moves, and it just, again, the back and forth and back and forth. By the way, it's always a joy to see Ricky the Dragon Steamboat wrestle. I mean, you watch him, and it's like, as somebody who's also seen his son in what was FCW and, of course, in NXT, it's like, why won't they use him more? I wish they would use him more because he's just like his father. And that's one of the most shocking things You know, he is a great wrestler, unlike some of the others who can't. He would be a great second-generation star to bring up, and I don't know why. It has to be height issues, but that's getting off point. This match was great. Just some great spots. Jack's double underhook suplex to Steamboat was a great spot. Just some great wrestling, and I love the sort of double-teamed move that finishes the match where Steamboat tags in Youngblood. Youngblood goes off the ropes. Steamboat launches him in the air. He lands on Jerry Briscoe in a aided splash for the pin. It was a great double team move. And again, I love the ring psychology. Again, the Briscoes thing is their double team moves, and the Youngblood and Steamboat beat them at their own game. Again, there was some fighting afterwards, but again, your new NWA World Tag Team Champions are G Youngblood and Ricky the Dragon Steamboat. Again, sounds dragon. But yeah, like I said, great match, love the finish, great wrestling all around. Second favorite match of the night. Which takes us to our main event. Now, mind you, throughout the night, they had been doing this thing where they've been going into the back, into the locker rooms and interviewing the wrestlers, interviewing Flair and Race. And mind you, I did like that. So Tony Schiavone interviewing them. And I did like that part. But there was a bit of time, a bit of showmanship. They had the national anthem sung between these two matches, which, I guess since it was the main event, it was like, main event, so this is where we're going to sing the national anthem. I mean, I wonder if they sung it twice. Because again, the event just opens on the, you know, the start of the Assassins and the R. Jones and McGraw match. But to sing the national anthem, it just seemed weird to me. And then you had Ric Flair's theme, which is the theme from 2001, A Space Odyssey playing. And a laser light show, because that was hip in the early 80s. But, you know, a smoke-filled entrance and Ric Flair coming, not to music, mind you, but they played 2001 Space Odyssey and had a laser light show. And then Ric Flair comes out, followed by Harley Race. By the way, this is a steel cage match for the NWA World Heavyweight Championship, with former NWA World Champion Gene Kinnitsky as the special referee. Now, all in all, this was actually somewhat of a good match. There's two things that really hurt that. I mean, Ric Flair and Harley Race are great wrestlers. And when one item in the match didn't get in the way, as I'm going to get to in a second, the wrestling and sort of the brawling aspect of the cage match was good. The number one thing that hurts the match for me is Gene Kinnitsky. Gene Kinnitsky, in this match, keeps getting involved. He keeps hitting their head because, again, you know, you're not supposed to have a closed fist. And I understand some people might like that, but for me, he just got involved way too much. It's a cage match! Let them brawl! I mean, there's literally a moment to where he's trying to pull Ric Flair. Like, for whatever reason, Ric Flair is back and forth, and then all of a sudden grabs him in, like, a double underhook lock, and is pulling him away. And Race then punches him in the face. Doesn't astonish Race. It's like, there seemed to be no constant to his refereeing. Yes, he was doing it to both guys, but there seemed no constant to why he was, I mean, well, Nick, well, he wants to see a wrestling match. It's a steel cage match! It's not a wrestling match. There's going to be no wrestling. There's going to be wrestling because of the tie, but there's no wrestling in a steel cage match. Just like there's no crying in baseball, there's no wrestling in a cage match. Okay? It is a steel cage match. It is a fight. And again, the maneuvers they used, great. I mean, great pile driver by Race on Flair. Flair hitting Race with a belly-to-back suplex. applying the figure four lock, use of the ropes by Race to break it. And again, a very interesting finish, because again, you don't, you know, all of us are used to Flair going to the top rope and failing. It's the big thing. But here, Flair almost runs up the ropes and then performs a body press off the top, pinning Race for the win. And so in that sense, it was a very interesting finish if, I'll bet, you knew Flair was going to win, which brings up my second issue. As I sort of made mention and made fun of earlier in this episode, the title of this Starrcade was Starrcade, a Flair for a Gold, or Flair for the Gold, excuse me, and was being held in Greensboro, North Carolina. If there was anything that sat there and told you exactly who was going to win. Now, mind you, you can forecast who's going to win and, you know, it still be surprising and still be a good match. Albeit, you know, WrestleMania 3. I mean, I think anybody who knew at the time understood that more than likely, or actually thought about it, would have realized probably Hogan was going to beat Andre. But at the same point in time, I mean, especially those who knew what was going on behind the scenes. But that being said, WWE did a great job of, like, really making it, making Hogan look like he was in trouble. You know, here, and again, I really don't know the back. Again, they had this whole thing of, you know, Flair coming back from being injured by Orton and Dick Slater. There was this whole story about Dick Slater and Orton cashing in. Race had offered a $25,000 bounty to have Flair put out of professional wrestling to avoid losing the title to him. And Orton and Slater cashed in on it with an aided pile driver. Mark Flair, again, this was a work. Supposedly having a serious neck injury and coming back from it. He even had Flair announcing his retirement from wrestling, as I'm looking at the notes here. But it just seems so obvious, and the surprise was there. And then when you add a match to where you have two good wrestlers who can wrestle, but you have a referee that constantly is getting involved and, like, ruins the match for you, it doesn't live up to its hype. It was a decent match. It could have been a great match if it had a better referee. And it just did not live up to the hype for me that they were hyping all. And again, I'm sure if I had seen everything that had led up to, I mean, like, for instance, today. Today, they would have this extensive montage package before the match showing everything that would happen to Flair. At the same point in time, I don't know that. All I know is that the things they're telling me, and these things supposedly happened, and this is a build-up, and it's a Flair for a Gold. It's the Flair for the Gold. Okay, stop telling me exactly who's going to win this match. And that's a big thing. Unfortunately, I think goes against some of these early pay-per-views, is that a lot of them can be very, very obvious who's going to win. And again, being obvious doesn't necessarily mean it's bad, but it can hurt your enjoyment of the match itself. So, it's not the worst match of the evening. It's not. I mean, I think I'll be fair. I think I'd probably tie it for the fourth best between that and Charlie Brown and the Great Kabuki. But at the same point in time, it just did not live up to what I felt its hype was. And the three other matches, number one being the dog collar match, number two being the NWA World Tag Team Champion match, and then number two being the tag team match for the championships, and number three being the tag team match between Daniels, Youngblood, and Orton and Slater. You know, I thought those were just better matches than this one. So at the end of the day, what do I think about this pay-per-view? Well, it was a very interesting pay-per-view. It's great to go back and look at the early 80s and all of that, and to look at classic NWA, which is good wrestling for the most part. I mean, we saw several matches with some great wrestling in it. You know, It's not a bad pay-per-view. It's just that if you're not used to it, it's definitely going to be a pop culture shock to you. The title match is okay. It just, the referee ruins it for me. But you have three great matches. Two great tag team matches. One between Orton and Slater and versus Wahoo Daniels and Mark Youngblood. You have the great dog collar match between Piper and Valentine, and then the great tag team match between Jay Youngblood and Ricky Steamboat versus the Briscoe brothers. So there's some great matches worth watching here. And I think it's worth watching just to see, again, history. Again, it's a great historical moment in wrestling history. So at the end of the day, I give Starrcade 1983 a flair for the gold. A 3 out of 5 pipe bombs. So that is it for my review of Starrcade 1983. I hope you enjoyed it. As I made mention earlier in the episode, tomorrow, in fact, I'm going to be reviewing WrestleMania 1 with my good friend B-Hyphen. I cannot wait for that. You guys do not know how long I've been waiting to try to do some type of podcast with B-Hyphen. We'll elaborate more of that on tomorrow's episode when we record it. Again, this will probably be coming out tonight. There's that, and then there's WrestleMania 14 are my next two reviews. So if you want to, and mind you, if you also want to say anything about the past three pay-per-views I've reviewed, which are ECW One Night Stand 2005, WCW Road Wild 1999, and of course right here, Starrcade 1983, A Flair for the Gold. You know, again, if you want to say anything or about any those two WrestleManias that I'm going to talk about, there are several ways you can contact the show. One, you can contact us by email to absolutionnetwork132@gmail.com. That's absolutionnetwork132@gmail.com. And also be known that the first letters in Absolution and Network, the A and N, are capitalized in that email. I know, it's a strange email address. So make sure you take care of that. You can also leave a comment on our Facebook page of the Absolution Network that you can find by going to www.facebook.com and searching for the Absolution Network. Like us and leave us a comment there. You can also always leave a comment on the website itself, which you can find at www.an.132productions.com. Also, make sure you check out all the other 132 Productions content that, of course, includes Tom Prerogative right here on the Absolution Network, the Shaft Plus podcast featuring Gene and Chris, where they talk about anime. You can find that at www.shaftplus.com. And, of course, my other podcast, which includes Tokyo SOS, a Godzilla podcast that you could find at www.tokyosos.132productions.com. And, of course, my Comic Book Crazy podcasting network, which features Comic Book Crazy, which may soon get a relaunch. I still have to talk about it with some people, so I don't know. And, of course, Hexcast, which you can find at www.comicbookcrazy.132productions.com. Of course, always make sure you check out all our friends on the sidebar of the site. This, of course, includes the WrestleCast over at RVT Entertainment, hosted by the legendary Matty J and TWK. Michael Bailey's Views from the Long Box. Brad Douglas' Spider-Man Crawlspace. Steve and Psyker's Major Spoilers Podcast. And, of course, Scott Gardner's Two True Freaks Podcasting Network. So that is it for this episode of CM Jews Wrestling Reviews. Next episode, we go back to where it all began for the showcase of the Immortals, WrestleMania 1. And I'll be joined by my good friend, B-Hyphen. So until next time, my wrestling fans, I want you to remember one thing about me. I'm the best Jew in the world! You're on the dive and you're
are all that I need. Each and every day I pray to get to know ya. Please wanna be close to you, yes I'm so hungry. You're like water for my soul when it gets thirsty. Without you there's no me or the air that I breathe. Sometimes the world is dark and I just can't see. With these demons around all around, I believe it, I'm too negative, I but I believe, yes I believe, I said I believe. Stand amounts of feet won't be brought down on one knee. I fight with all of my might to get these demons to flee. Hashem's rays, fire blaze, burn bright in, I believe. Hashem's rays, fire blaze, burn bright in, I believe. How the darkness comes light, twilight unto the heights. Crown lights burning up, out of the twilight. So thank you to my God, now I finally got it right. And I fight with all of my heart and all of my soul and all of my mind. I give myself to you from the essence of my being and I sing to my God. Songs of love and healing, I want Mashiach now. Time it starts a feeling. What's this feeling? My love will be holy in a ceiling. I give myself to you from the essence of my being and I sing to my God. Songs of love and healing, I want Mashiach now. Stripping away the layers and reveal your soul. You gotta give yourself up and then you become whole. You're a slave to yourself and them don't even know. Them wanna tell you.